sermon series through the book of Genesis. This is message number 43 in that series, entitled Gray Hair to the Grave. So we're going to be looking at Genesis chapter number 42. We will begin with verses 1 and 2. Now when Jacob saw that there was corn in Egypt, Jacob said unto his sons, Why do ye look one upon another? And he said, Behold, I have heard that there is corn in Egypt. Get you down thither, and buy for us from thence, that we may live and not die. So chapter 41, which we looked at the last time that we studied here in Genesis, it gives the account of this incredible turnaround for Joseph. He went from hated brother in the pit to the despised Hebrew slave in Potiphar's house to forgotten in prison. And this very unlikely path led to Joseph being governor, essentially, over all of Egypt. Second in command, second only to the Pharaoh, the king himself. And all of that happened without Joseph scheming or plotting or working deceptions or working angles or trying to make these things come about, anything at all of the sort. Moses has consistently shown Joseph to be a man of faith, a man of integrity. And these things are shown to us as being the working of God in the life of Joseph. Now, Joseph's promotion came about in chapter 41 because the Pharaoh was troubled by a pair of dreams that he had one night. And none of his counselors were able to interpret the dream. They were not able to give him any help in that dream at all. And Joseph made it clear that it wasn't him. It wasn't in him. It wasn't in Joseph to be able to interpret dreams, but that God would give the interpretation to Pharaoh. And so by these dreams, God revealed what he was going to do. He was about to give 7 years of abundant plenty in the land of Egypt. And that was going to be followed by 7 years of severe famine in Egypt. So Joseph suggested a course of action that essentially was a sweeping reform of the government of Egypt, of the taxation system in Egypt. He suggested that someone competent should be appointed over it to be able to oversee all of it. And so Pharaoh was impressed with Joseph and appointed him as the second in command in all of Egypt to implement this plan that he outlined. Again, just one of the greatest turnarounds in all of Scripture. Well, several times as we've been in this part of Genesis, as we're getting close to the end of the book, I've referred to this section of Genesis as the Joseph story. And if this were merely the story of Joseph, then it would seem that chapter 41 would be the big climax of the story. I mean, he went from loved by his father, favored by his father, hated by his brothers, thrown in a pit, sold into slavery, ends up in a prison, falsely accused, and then all of a sudden he is the second in command over all of Egypt. That would seem to be the big climax of the story. I mean, Joseph has gone from rags to riches. And so we might think, if we stop there, we might think, well, the moral of this story then is to just patiently trust and keep clean, and then you too can have wealth and power. Well, there are a few problems with this. One of those is that there are still several chapters to go to get to the end of Genesis after we've reached this big climax, if that's indeed what it is. And then when we look at the next several chapters, starting here with chapter number 42, these next several chapters focus on Jacob and Joseph's brothers and how they get to Egypt. Now, Joseph is certainly the main character in this section, but the story is larger than Joseph himself, and he knows it. So the next several chapters show how much larger that this story is. And as we look at chapter number 42, this chapter tells us about how that Joseph was reunited with his brothers, sort of, not officially yet, but he is reunited with them. And as this severe famine sets in, Joseph's family in Canaan began to be affected by it, and they seemed to have no option but to go down to Egypt in order to buy food. Now, it's easy to imagine how that Joseph could have seen this opportunity as the perfect opportunity to get revenge on his brothers. And I imagine that probably would be a thought that would cross every one of our minds had we been treated by our siblings the way that Joseph had been treated. But rather than that, Joseph demonstrates wisdom in the way that he deals with them, setting us up for the resolution of their reunion to come. So, in other words, this chapter isn't the final word on this. It goes through chapter 46 before we see all of this worked out. And from beginning to end, Joseph shows himself to be very, very wise in the way that he handles it. All right, so we're going to look at this chapter in two parts, in verses 1 to 17, where we learn that the brothers go to Egypt to buy food, and then in verses 18 to 38, where we see Jacob's grief. So let's begin here in this first part where the brothers go to buy food. We'll start with verses 1 to 4. Now, when Jacob saw that there was corn in Egypt, Jacob said unto his sons, "Why do you look one upon another?" And he said, "Behold, I have heard that there is corn in Egypt. Get you down thither and buy for us from thence, that we may live and not die." And Joseph's 10 brethren went down to buy corn in Egypt. But Benjamin, Joseph's brother, Jacob sent not with his brethren, for he said, "Lest peradventure mischief befall him." So this famine is obviously lurking in the background in these chapters and in this account. Now, previously in Genesis, we have seen famines prompting action, and this famine prompts action as well. But the suspense of the famine in this case is a little bit overshadowed. I mean, the famine is an obstacle, and we've seen it be an obstacle previously in Genesis. And it is certainly an obstacle to the fulfillment of the promises to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. But it's overshadowed by the suspense of how the tension will be resolved between Joseph and his brothers, which seems a more immediate threat, actually, to those promises being fulfilled. Well, we're told here in the opening of this chapter that Jacob had heard about grain in Egypt, and we're not told how that he heard about this. We don't know, but he did hear about it. And his sons, this statement about his sons, they just seem to be looking at one another. In other words, his sons seem to not know what to do. In other words, this famine is affecting them to the point where they need to do something, and the brothers didn't know what to do. And so Jacob speaks up that he's heard of this grain in Egypt, and he instructs these sons of his to go to Egypt and to buy grain. And then we see Jacob's statement there at the end of verse number 2, that we may live and not die. Now, Jacob's statement about living and not dying brings us back to that larger story. You see, Israel, the nation that God promised to Abraham, is in danger from this famine. They are in danger from the tension between Joseph and his brothers, and they're in danger because of this famine. And actually, life and death are thematic in the Pentateuch, the first five books of the Bible. And if you read through them very carefully, you're going to see that as a recurring theme, life and death, life and death. And actually, you can go all the way back to the second chapter of Genesis, where Adam and Eve were warned that if they would eat from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, they would die. And so right there, the theme of life and death is introduced, and it continues on through the Pentateuch. And we see it here in the case of Jacob. And he says, if we don't get some food, we're going to die and not live, which would mean the destruction of the nation and the failure of God's promises to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. So again, we're brought back to the fact that, you know what, there's a larger story here. There's a larger story going on than just what happens to Joseph personally or what happens to Joseph with his brothers interpersonally. There's a larger story and a larger purpose that God is working out. Now, Moses notes that 10 of the brothers went to Egypt. And Jacob obviously did not send Benjamin, his youngest son, and his only other son from Rachel, whom he loved most. He did not send Benjamin because he was afraid of something happening to him. If something happened to Benjamin, then he would be completely bereaved of his most beloved wife and her two sons. So obviously now Jacob is favoring Benjamin similar to how he had favored Joseph before he thought he was dead. And it might seem to be a minor point. It might seem to just be, well, you know, of course that would be the case. But it is an important piece of information as we go forward and we evaluate the way that the brothers conduct themselves. We've already seen the way they conducted themselves toward Joseph. And it was their father's favoring of Joseph that added that fuel to the fire of their hatred for him that made them want to kill him. Well, now he's favoring Benjamin. So has there been change in his brothers? Has something changed? How will they respond to this? Let's look at verses 5 to 9. And the sons of Israel came to buy corn from among those that came, for the famine was in the land of Canaan. And Joseph was the governor over the land, and he it was that sold to all the people of the land. And Joseph's brethren came and bowed down themselves before him with their faces to the earth. And Joseph saw his brethren, and he knew them, but made himself strange unto them, and spake roughly unto them. And he said unto them, Whence come ye? And they said, From the land of Canaan to buy food. And Joseph knew his brethren, but they knew not him. And Joseph remembered the dreams which he dreamed of them, and said unto them, Ye are spies, to see the nakedness of the land, ye are come. Now the previous chapter, at the end, chapter 41, notes how that people came from different countries to the land of Egypt in order to buy grain because of the severity and the extent of the famine. So Joseph's brothers were joining with many others. In other words, there's a stream of people from these different countries that are going into Egypt to buy food. And so Joseph's brothers are among them as they are going in to buy food. Now the point is that there was just a sheer number of people that had to be involved with going into Egypt to buy food. And it shows us here that Joseph, seeing his brothers, had to be, on the one hand, just the providential timing of God. That Joseph was just in the right place. I mean, as we read Joseph's plan for the nation of Egypt, he was going to set up storage cities in strategic locations. Joseph obviously could not be in every one of those cities at the same time. But somehow, Joseph is in the right place at the right time to see his brothers coming. So on the one hand, this is either providential timing by God, that he's there in the right place at the right time, or it could certainly be possible that Joseph, as he's already been shown to be one that was great in wisdom, was wise enough to understand that sooner or later, his family is going to have to come down and buy grain because they are affected by this famine. So it could very well be that he has prepared for them, that he has positioned himself in the place where he needs to be in order to see them when they come, being assured that they are going to come. Now, so which way is it? Well, we don't have a definitive answer in the chapter itself, in the text. I do think that it is very likely that Joseph, knowing that they would have to come, had so arranged things that he was in the place where they would have to come in order to buy grain. Again, we don't know for certain. If that's not the case, then it certainly was the providential timing of God, which we have seen at work in this account before. And so that certainly is not beyond possibility. We're told how that they literally bowed down before Joseph. Now, they didn't know it was him, but they literally bowed down before him. And we're told in these verses that Joseph remembered the dreams that he had dreamed long before, back in chapter 37, and how that those dreams are beginning to be fulfilled literally. Here are 10 of his brothers bowing down, faces to the ground, in front of Joseph. Now, Joseph was effectively disguised, so they did not recognize him. So it's not that hard to imagine. Of course, in their minds, and as they go on to say in a little bit, it seems like they thought most likely that Joseph was probably dead by now. Joseph was, at this point, 20 years older than when they'd sold him into slavery. The previous chapter said that he was 30 years old, and that was before the 7 years of plenty began, and then the 7 years of famine that are to follow. So Joseph would have been about 20 years older than when they sold him into slavery at this time. He was completely shaven, head and face. We saw reference to him being shaven before he went to go see Pharaoh, and that was the custom in ancient Egypt for the men. He was also dressed like an Egyptian. He was also occupying a place that was the second in command in all of Egypt. And then we learn later that he was actually speaking to them through an interpreter. So it's not that surprising that they did not recognize him. And of course, they would never have expected to see him. And we've all had that sort of experience where we've run into someone we know, but we never expected to see them there. And so for a moment, we had to think, wait a minute, who is this? And then it sort of dawns on us. Well, they didn't know who that he was, and he wasn't doing anything to make himself familiar to them. So he accuses them, we read here, of being spies. Now, this probably was a legitimate concern, because this famine is getting very severe throughout all these lands around Egypt. But Egypt was the only country that God had revealed to what was going to happen, so they were the only ones prepared for it. They have large stores of food, and people are coming from all around to buy the food. So it very could well be that there could be armies that would be tempted, perhaps, to try to come and raid those stores and carry them off. And so I'm certainly they were alert for that security. Let's look at verses 10 to 13. And they said unto him, "Nay, my Lord, but to buy food are thy servants come. We are all one man's sons. We are true men. Thy servants are no spies." And he said unto them, "Nay, but to see the nakedness of the land ye are come." And they said, "Thy servants are 12 brethren, the sons of one man in the land of Canaan. And behold, the youngest is this day with our father, and one is not." So the brothers object to this accusation, obviously, explaining that they're all brothers. They all have, the same father, which would make their being spies somewhat unlikely. But this did not satisfy Joseph, or satisfy the governor as they saw him, not knowing it was Joseph. And as Joseph continues to say that they were spies, they begin speaking more of their family, mentioning that there are 12 brothers, 12 sons in their family. The youngest is at home with their father. The other is not. Now, it's not entirely clear what they mean by that statement, but it seems at least to suggest that they probably believe Joseph likely to be dead at this point. I don't think the life expectancy of a Hebrew slave in foreign hands was usually going to be all of that long. So they probably have expected that he is dead and gone by now, or maybe just long gone. Who knows where he's at this point? It's hard to say exactly what they think about that. Verses 14 to 17. And Joseph said unto them, "That is it that I spake unto you, saying, ye are spies. Hereby ye shall be proved. By the life of Pharaoh, ye shall not go forth hence, except your youngest brother come hither. Send one of you, and let him fetch your brother, and ye shall be kept in prison, that your words may be proved, whether there be any truth in you, or else by the life of Pharaoh, surely ye are spies." And he put them all together into ward 3 days. So at this point, we see, you get that word that's used there in verse 15, that they were being proved. Joseph is testing his brothers. So they can prove their innocence by one of them going home, bringing their youngest brother back to Egypt. And then Joseph puts them into prison for 3 days and leaves them there. Now this brings us to the second part in this chapter, beginning here at verse number 18, where we see Jacob's grief by the end. So let's begin with verses 18 to 20. And Joseph said unto them the third day, "This do and live, for I fear God. If ye be true men, let one of your brethren be bound in the house of your prison, Go ye, carry corn for the famine of your houses, but bring your youngest brother unto me. So shall your words be verified, and ye shall not die. And they did so. So Joseph proposes this solution to the brothers, again continuing this theme of life and death. And they could leave one of the brothers in prison behind and go back with the grain and then bring back Benjamin to Egypt. And of course, Joseph tells them, I fear God, I fear Elohim. In other words, he fears the God of your fathers is what he is telling them. And we go on to read in verses 21 to 24. And they said one to another, we are very guilty concerning our brother in that we saw the anguish of his soul when he besought us and we would not hear. Therefore is this distress come upon us. And Reuben answered them, saying, spake I not unto you, saying, do not sin against a child, and ye would not hear? Therefore, behold, also his blood is required. And they knew not that Joseph understood them, for he spake unto them by an interpreter. And he turned himself about from them, and wept, and returned to them again, and communed with them, and took from them Simeon, and bound him before their eyes. So here, after that, Joseph has come to them. They've spent 3 days in prison, and Joseph tells them they're going to have to leave one behind and go and bring their younger brother back. And they conclude that their sins have caught up with them. And though they did not recognize Joseph, they perceived that Joseph was involved in what was going on. And they talk about, we are guilty concerning our brother. Now, Reuben speaks up here at this point, and he reminds them. Reuben essentially gives them an I told you so. He persuaded them at the time not to kill Joseph, but only to put him in a pit. And remember, he planned to secretly go and rescue him, but when he went, Joseph was not there. He'd already been sold to the merchants heading to Egypt. So at this point, we learn that Joseph had spoken with them through an interpreter, and so his brothers didn't know that he understood all this. And notice how all this acknowledgement of guilt and wrongdoing, that Joseph was overcome, and he had to leave them and weep. And then he returned, and he dramatically had Simeon bound in front of them as a reminder, and they were to go and to bring back Benjamin. Joseph is far from finished in terms of testing his brothers. Let's go on in verses 25 to 28. Then Joseph commanded to fill their sacks with corn and to restore every man's money into his sack and to give them provision for the way. And thus did he unto them. And they laded their asses with the corn and departed thence. And as one of them opened his sack to give his ass provender in the end, he espied his money, for behold, it was in the sack's mouth. And he said unto his brethren, my money is restored, and lo, it is even in my sack. And my heart, and their heart failed them, and they were afraid, saying one to another, what is this that God hath done unto us? So Joseph then has their grain sacks filled, the money returned to them. And along the way, one of the brothers discovers that his money is in the sack and tells the others about it. And now we read that they were truly afraid for how this would turn out. In other words, there's a confession here that God is punishing them. In other words, they see all of these events as working together for bad. They see all of these things working against them. There's not going to be a good outcome to this. God is punishing us for our sins. Verses 29 to 34. And they came unto Jacob their father, unto the land of Canaan, and told him all that befell unto them, saying, the man who is the Lord of the land spake roughly to us, and took us for spies of the country. And we said unto him, we are true men, we are no spies. We be 12 brethren, sons of our father. One is not, and the youngest is this day with our father in the land of Canaan. And the man, the lord of the country, said unto us, hereby shall I know that you are true men. Leave one of your brethren with me, here with me, and take food for the famine of your households, and be gone. And bring your youngest brother unto me, then shall I know that you are no spies. But that ye are true men, so will I deliver your brother, and ye shall traffic in the land. So the brothers finally make it back home, and I believe it was about a week's journey for them to go to Egypt and to come back. And the brothers returned home, and they're telling their father Jacob what had happened. And they made it very clear that in order for them to return for grain, and in order for them to return for Simeon as well, their brother, they would have to bring Benjamin with them. And that sets us up for Jacob's response here, verses 35 to 38. And it came to pass, as they emptied their sacks, that, behold, every man's bundle of money was in his sack. And when both they and their father saw the bundles of money, they were afraid. And Jacob their father said unto them, Me have you bereaved of my children, Joseph is not, and Simeon is not, and ye will take Benjamin away? All these things are against me. And Reuben spake unto his father, saying, Slay my two sons, if I bring him not to thee. Deliver him into my hand, and I will bring him to thee again. And he said, My son shall not go down with you, for his brother is dead, and he is left alone. If mischief befall him by the way in which ye go, then shall ye bring down my gray hairs with sorrow to the grave. So the brothers, along with Jacob, discovered that all of them, in fact, had their money in their sacks, and they were all afraid of what would come of this. And then Joseph expresses his grief. In other words, Joseph also saw all these things working together for bad. He says, all of these things are against me. There's not going to be a good outcome here. He is grieved for his sons and the prospect of losing Benjamin on top of it all. And Jacob judged that all of these events were against him. And then we get Reuben speaking up again. And Reuben speaks up and offers his two sons in the place of Benjamin, essentially, which is just an outrageous offer that Reuben makes here. And of course, Jacob rejects it. Jacob figures if something happened to Benjamin, it would bring him to the grave. Obviously, there would be no comfort in Reuben's plan. So from what we get from Reuben in this chapter, it seems that he hasn't changed, at least not much at all. Now, we will pick back up with the story of Judah as we continue on to where we see that change has been worked in him. But Reuben sort of provides a what would be called a foil against Judah to make his actions stand out all the more. So as we look at this chapter number 42, we can see those clues here and there as we work along the way that this story is larger than Joseph himself and his personal gain. This is not a story of how one man lost it all and then got it all back, even more than what he had before. That's not the story that we're reading in the story of Joseph at the end of the book of Genesis. And that gets even clearer as this continues to unfold over the next several chapters. But Joseph is one who also sees that this is God's story and that God is working all things together for good. So in a way, it's sort of like in the last chapter. Remember how Pharaoh had the dreams? He's got the good cows and the evil cows and the good wheat and the evil wheat and so on. And Pharaoh and all of his counselors were not able to discern between the good and evil. Well, here again, we have these real life events that are unfolding. And Joseph's brothers and his father Jacob all think that these events are bad. These are bad signs. This means that things are working together for bad. Things are working against us. There's no good outcome here. And Joseph is the only one who is again able to discern the good from the evil. And again, we'll see this and it's going to be reinforced as we go on reading in the story of Joseph. But he sees that all these things are working together for good. And he will tell them that as we proceed. So what was it that Joseph knew? In other words, how is Joseph thinking as far as we can tell as these events are unfolding? Well, Joseph knew that Israel was the nation that was promised to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And he knew that that nation of Israel had to survive in order for God's promises to be fulfilled. Joseph was the one that had the dreams over 20 years earlier that had to be fulfilled, where he saw his 11 brothers bowing down to him, and then later saw his 11 brothers and his mother and father as well bowing down to him. And Joseph knew that those dreams had to be fulfilled, which if they all died in a famine, they would not be fulfilled. Joseph knew the promises to Abraham and that the nation would go into a strange land and be brought back to the land of Canaan. They would be there for 400 years. Joseph knew that God promised to bless all nations of the earth through Abraham and that nation from him. Joseph knew that God promised Noah that he would not destroy all of life on earth again with a flood. Now, what that meant was that God intended to save mankind in some way. Joseph also knew that Noah's father Lamech expected a male child to be born that would reverse the curse on the creation and restore it. Joseph also knew that Adam and Eve were promised that there would be a seed of the woman who would crush the head of the serpent and destroy his work. So now the children of Israel are on the plains of Moab 4 centuries after Joseph lived. And they're being given this book. And they're told of God's intentions to bring them into the land. In other words, they are a part of this same story that Joseph is a part of, that Joseph knew was older than him. It started before he was ever born. He knew that it was going on after that he died. The writer of Hebrews, remembers, tells us about Joseph's faith, that he wanted his bones to be buried in the land of Canaan after he died. So this story is much larger than any one character in it. This story is Moses' words to Israel. As he's giving them this story, also gives them the appropriate lesson that we learn in a chapter like this. And if you think about Deuteronomy chapter 8, of course Deuteronomy is the final book of the Pentateuch, as Moses delivered these 5 books to the children of Israel before they went into the land of Canaan. So think about these words that Moses told that generation of Israel. Deuteronomy chapter number 8, beginning at verse 1. All the commandments which I command thee this day shall you observe to do, that you may live. And there we see that theme continuing on as we're getting toward the end of the Pentateuch. And multiply and go in and possess the land which the Lord sware unto your fathers. Who's he talking about? Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And thou shalt remember all the way which the Lord thy God led thee these 40 years in the wilderness to humble thee, and to prove thee, to know what was in thine heart, whether thou wouldest keep his commandments or no. And he humbled thee, and suffered thee to hunger, and fed thee with manna which thou knewest not, neither did thy fathers know, that he might make thee know that man doth not live by bread only, but by every word that proceedeth out of the mouth of the Lord doth man live. Thy raiment waxed not old upon thee, neither did thy foot swell these 40 years. Thou shalt also consider in thine heart that as a man chasteneth his son, so the Lord thy God chasteneth thee. Therefore thou shalt keep the commandments of the Lord thy God, to walk in his ways and to fear him. For the Lord thy God bringeth thee into a good land, a land of brooks of water, of fountains and depths that spring out of valleys and hills, a land of wheat and barley and vines and fig trees and pomegranates, a land of oil, olive, and honey, a land wherein thou shalt eat bread without scarceness, thou shalt not lack anything in it, a land whose stones are iron, and out of whose hills thou mayest dig brass. When thou hast eaten and art full, then thou shalt bless the Lord thy God for the good land which he hath given thee. Beware that thou forget not the Lord thy God in not keeping his commandments, his judgments, and his statutes which I command thee this day, lest when thou hast eaten and art full, and hast built goodly houses and dwelt therein, and when thy herds and thy flocks multiply, and thy silver and thy gold is multiplied, and all that thou hast is multiplied, then thine heart be lifted up, and thou forget the Lord thy God, which brought thee forth out of the land of Egypt from the house of bondage. So Moses is reminding them at the end how that they come to be in Egypt, And of course, what we're reading here in Genesis 42 is telling us just that. How did the nation of Israel come to be in the land of Egypt, where they would be for 400 years before they were brought out, and then 40 years later are finally about to enter the promised land? So what's Moses telling them here? He's telling them that they are a part of God's story. They are a part of the work that God is doing. Now, that is going to involve great blessing for them. I'm going to bring you into this land. I promised it to your fathers, and you're going to be abundantly blessed there. But don't forget the Lord and begin to think that you yourself have achieved this, that you are worthy of this, that you have merited all of this favor and blessing in some way. And as we read the story of Joseph, Joseph was a man that got it. He understood that. And again, that just becomes clearer and clearer as we work all the way to the last chapter of the book of Genesis. So we want to be paying attention to that as we go through these last chapters. So God had a plan and has a plan to save all those who believe from every nation, all the way back to his promises to Abraham, to his promises to Noah, all the way back to Adam and Eve. God has a plan to save all those who believe from every nation on this earth. And even today, we are a part of God's larger story as we wait the return of Jesus Christ to set up his kingdom on this earth, to restore Israel as a nation, to rule in glory from David's throne. This is the story that we are in. This is a story that we are a part of. And this life is not the story about how we can get all that we can get, how that we can have the best of everything that we can have in this life. No, it's a story of what God is going to do as we await the return of Jesus Christ. Thank you.